This is the fifth day of this November 2010 seven-day sesshin. Today we're going to take up a koan. This is in the Mumonkan, or the Gateless Gate, number 14. Nansen cuts the cat in two. First, read the case. Once, when the monks of the Western and Eastern halls were arguing about a cat, Nansen, holding up the cat, said, "You monks, if you can say a word of Zen, I'll spare the cat. Otherwise, I'll kill it." No one could answer, so Nansen cut the cat in two. That evening, when Joshu returned, Nansen told him of the incident. Joshu thereupon took off his sandal, put it on his head, and walked off. Nansen said, "If you had been there, the cat would have been saved." So, Nansen is the Japanese name of Nanshuan. These are both Chinese masters. Nanshuan's biographical material we read in the last sesshin, last month, so I'm going to forego that, but except to say that he was a very, very distinguished, illustrious Chan master, one of the greatest. He was a disciple of the great Ma Zhu. Before meeting Ma Zhu, he had already deeply studied the various other schools of Buddhism and the sutras, various sutras. At their first meeting, he is said to have, quote, "instantly forgotten the net of delusions and delighted in samadhi." So now, Joshu, whose original Chinese name is Zhao Zhou, he was the most famous disciple and Dharma heir of Nanshuan. He had his first great awakening at the age of 18. Oh, excuse me, I'm reading from the book Zen's Chinese Heritage, edited and translated by Andy Ferguson. He had his first awakening at the age of 18, and then he spent 40 years with Nanshuan until Nanshuan died. It's a big age difference between them. He was supposed to have had full enlightenment at the age of 56, and then he set off traveling to meet other teachers and further cultivate his practice. He met several other illustrious teachers of the time. This was the great Tang Dynasty. So he went knee to knee, eyeball to eyeball with Huang Bo, Obaku, and others. Eventually, he was invited to settle and teach at the Kuan Yin Monastery in Zhao Zhou, a place with the same name. And that now that's called the Bailin Monastery, which is one of the ones that our group of pilgrims visited in September. There was a group of some 30 Zen Center members and a few others who visited Joshu's own monastery there. I'll just switch to Zhaozhou. It's not that difficult to pronounce, not as difficult as some Chinese names. It always feels a little unfair to use the revised name, but I'll try to do the Chinese. Zhaozhou's fame spread throughout China. He had 13 Dharma heirs, but his lineage soon died out. You know, it's a real... it's very unpredictable which of these masters' lineages continue for very long. Zhaozhou and the other one, Yunmen, were the two masters who figure in the most number of koans, two of the most famous of all the masters of all time, and neither of them had their lineage last for that long. Of course, we know Zhaozhou from as the monk who asked his teacher, Nanchuan, "Does a dog have Buddha nature?" Oh, excuse me, it's the other way. A monk asked Zhaozhou, "Does a dog have Buddha nature?" And we know Zhaozhou's answer. The word mu, which is the original word used in China, was wu. So they mean the same thing. And they're often translated as no or not. That's what makes it a koan, because according to Buddhist teaching, what is common to all of us, all beings, is this Buddha nature. So why would Zhaozhou say mu? I've encountered a couple of sources that say that to translate mu as no or not is off the mark. One translator argued that the best way to understand the word mu linguistically is that it means it's not what you think. That seems very good as far as a linguistic definition. It's not what you think. Master Zhaozhou, does a dog have Buddha nature? No. And there's a story here of when Zhaozhou met Nanchuan. Nanchuan at the time was lying down and resting. And Zhaozhou asked... when he saw Zhaozhou, he asked, "Where have you come from?" Zhaozhou said, "I've come from Ryushang," which translated means omen figure. "I've come from Ryushang." Nanchuan said, "Did you see the standing omen's figure?" Zhaozhou said, "No, but I've seen a reclining Tathagata." Of course, referring to Nanchuan himself. This got Nanchuan up from his reclining position, and he said, "As a novice monk, do you have a teacher or not?" Zhaozhou replied, "I have a teacher." Nanchuan said, "Who is your teacher?" Zhaozhou stepped in front of Nanchuan, bowed, and said, "In the freezing winter cold, a prostrate monk only asks for the master's blessings." Nanchuan approved and accepted him as a student. There's so many koans involving Zhao Zhou and also a few involving Nanchuan. I'm going to skip reading those incidents, those stories, and just read a few others. One time Nanchuan said, "People of this time must practice among different species." Zhao Zhou said, "Not to speak of different, what do you mean by species?" Nanchuan got down on all fours. Zhao Zhou shoved him over with his foot. And then he went into the Nirvana Hall. That's the infirmary, the like hospital for the monastery. He went in there and yelled, "I'm sorry, I'm sorry." Nanchuan instructed his attendant to ask Zhao Zhou, "What are you sorry about?" Zhao Zhou said, "I'm sorry I didn't kick him again." One day, Zhao Zhou was walking with an official in a park. They came upon a rabbit, and the rabbit ran away. The official asked Zhao Zhou, "Master, you are a great worthy. When the rabbit saw you, why did it run away?" Zhao Zhou said, "Because I'm good at killing." It's important that in these exchanges, these between the masters, not to take things literally. Another time, Zhao Zhou entered the hall and addressed the monks, saying, "Big mind is unborn. The myriad dharmas are flawless. Try sitting for 20 or 30 years, and if you still don't understand, then cut off my head. The empty flowers of delusion and dreams, disciples work so hard to grab them." We can hear in this statement much of the same point that we heard Hanshan making in his talks that we read from earlier in the Sesshin. The empty flowers of delusion and dreams. Disciples work so hard to grab them. Well, delusions like the big one, that there is some state called enlightenment that is apart from us. That's as big as they come. The notion that it's outside us, it's something we have to get to and that isn't already our own nature. Then he said, "I heard Yao Shan say," Yao Shan is another great Chan master, "people ask me to reveal it, but when I teach, it is like something taken from a dog's mouth." And then Zhao Zhou says, "What I teach is like something taken from a dog's mouth. Take what I say as dirty. Don't take what I say as clean. Don't be like a hound always looking for something to eat." What does he mean? "What I teach is like something taken from a dog's mouth." We all know what it's like to take that tennis ball that was full of slobber out of a dog's mouth. Actually, that's a word that Hakuin uses in one of his talks. He refers to his talk as fox slobber. These statements where the masters talk about, they talk with such denigration about the words they use in their teaching is not just self-effacement. It is to use words for this incomparably profound and subtle teaching. It always feels like we're diminishing it. We're just making it stale with using words, even if the words are live and come from understanding, and still he then said, this nature existed before the appearance of the world. If the world ends, this will not end. From the time I saw my true self, there hasn't been anyone else. There's just the one in charge. So what is there to be sought elsewhere? At the moment you have this, don't turn your head or shuffle your brains. If you turn your head or shuffle your brains, it'll be lost. As soon as we start pondering and thinking, bringing our discriminating mind into it, then it evaporates. A monk asked, how old is the master? Zhaozhou said, a long string of pearls without end. He was famous for having lived to the age of 120. The monk asked, whose dharma did the master inherit? Zhaozhou said, Kongshen's. The monk asked, if suddenly someone from outside asked the master, what dharma does Zhaozhou expound? What would you say? Zhaozhou said, the salt is expensive, but the rice is cheap. Zhaozhou asked a monk, how many sutras do you read in one day? He probably knew that the monk was something of a scholar. The monk said, sometimes 7 or 8, sometimes 10. Zhaozhou said, oh, then you can't read sutras. The monk said, well, master, how many do you read in a day? Zhaozhou said, in one day, I read one word. We could say that all sutras can be distilled into the word mu. Another master by the name of Zhao Wang asked Zhao Zhou, at your venerable age, master, how many teeth do you have left? These are seldom innocent questions. There's always something behind these questions. Zhaozhou said, just one. Zhao Wang said, can you still eat things? Zhaozhou said, although there's only one, it's still chewing. An official, government official, asked Zhaozhou, will the master go to hell or not? Zhaozhou said, I entered hell long ago. The official said, why do you enter hell? Zhao Zhou said, "If I don't enter hell, who will teach you?" And just one more. A monk asked, "Does the cypress tree in the garden have Buddha nature or not?" Zhao Zhou said, "It has." The monk asked, "When will it become a Buddha?" Zhao Zhou said, "When the great void falls to earth." The monk asked, "When will the great void fall to earth?" Zhao Zhou said, "When the cypress becomes a Buddha." Well, that's all the time we have. There's so many dialogues involving Zhao Zhou, but let's leave it at that and move on to the case again. This is one of the most famous of all koans in the many collections of koans. Let's read it again. "Once when the monks of the Western and Eastern halls were arguing about a cat," just to say that these giant monasteries of ancient China were divided into different segments. There might be a hall where the monks' primary practice was studying the sutras. Another hall would be the meditation monks, and there might be others as well. Hearing from some of our members who were on the pilgrimage recently there, described it as absolutely immense. They're going to give a travelogue in about a week and a half here in Rochester, and we'll get to see many of the photos there. But there would be these whole different divisions of the monastery, and here were some monks who'd somehow come together, and they were arguing about a cat. What it was, what the argument was, we don't know. We can suppose that it was a slow day there at the monastery, and they were just idly arguing. It could have been any number of philosophical points that we come across in Buddhist texts. They may have been arguing whether the cat exists or doesn't exist, whether it has Buddha nature or not, or who the cat belonged to, the Western Hall or the Eastern Hall. It doesn't matter. They were arguing. And then Nanchuan grabs the cat, says, "You monks, if you give me a word of Zen, I'll spare the cat. Otherwise, I'll kill it. There's the challenge. All right, you eat your rice every day. You are spared paying taxes. You don't have to go into the draft. Now, show me something for that. What have you realized? Bring me some live Zen right now. Give me a word of Zen." We don't know the backstory. He may have sort of gotten weary of the disputes, the arguments among monks, and how much time they were wasting instead of doing zazen, engaging in this idle talk. But a challenge it was. arguments, of course, always are about two-ness, division, seeing my idea or my opinion versus your idea or your opinion. There is a dialogue attributed to the eighth ancestor, Buddha Nandi. This is from the what's called the transmission of the lamp, the Denko Roku, which is used as koans. It's just a collection of the transmission, mind-to-mind transmission from master disciple to disciple all through the line. This is the eighth one after Shakyamuni. And it goes like this. The eighth ancestor, Buddha Nandi, met the seventh ancestor, Vasumitra, and said, "I have come to argue the real fact with you." Vasumitra said, "If you argue, it is not the real fact. The real fact is not argument. If you want to argue, it cannot be an argument of the real fact." And at that, Buddha Nandi came to enlightenment. It's widely advised in Zen practice and training not to get involved in arguments. They just reinforce the illusion of separateness, and they can, of course, generate ill will between people, among people. It's one thing to argue or to debate when there's no attachment to one's position, and then that can be illuminating for both parties if it's done out of goodwill and lightness. Seems to me the worst, the most dangerous kind of arguments is arguing political arguments. This politics has a way of dividing people and creating so much animosity. How often in political arguments do you manage to change the other person's mind? How much in marital arguments do you manage to change the other person's mind? Remaining in duality, you'll never know of unity. And not to know this unity lets conflict lead you far astray. So there's the challenge. Say a word and I'll spare the cat, otherwise I'll kill it. What would you have done? Well, no one could answer. We don't know if there were 6 monks or 12 monks or 60 monks, but no one could answer. So it says, Nansen cut the cat in two. Nanchuan cut the cat in two. Whatever they were arguing about, we can be sure in their argument, they were making an object out of the cat. They were making an it out of it. That's the problem with language. We have these pronouns that so persistently reinforce the illusion of separateness. It's me here, there's the cat out there, or us and the cat, self and other. And And in this case of the koan, there is the us against them. Us in the Western Hall against them in the Eastern Hall. It's an old, old story, isn't it? If it's not philosophical arguments, it's political. If it's not political, it's religious. It's sports. It's territory. This cause of our suffering is ego delusion. Ego meaning the illusion of self and other, us and them. Tunis. There's a place for, of course, there we make discriminations, we divide, because it offers a lot of convenience in doing so. It's just a normal, conventional way of learning to cope with the world, is having these different names for religions and politics and so forth. But the problem is not that it, not naming things, it's becoming attached to the names. Lao Tzu said, behind the divisible, there is always something indivisible. Behind the disputable, there is always something indisputable. That's what, evidently, what Nanchuan felt that the monks had not yet seen. So how, what does he gain by cutting the cat in two? Again, this is not to be taken literally, cutting of the cat in two. It's all but inconceivable that a master of Nanchuan's depth of understanding would just without good cause do something like this. He no doubt went through the motions. He mined it. So what would you have done if you were among the monks? Give me a word. Don't! That evening, when Zhao Zhou returned, Nanchuan told him of the incident. No, he wasn't just idly telling him about it. He was inviting him to offer his own response. And sure enough, Zhao Zhou took off his sandal, put it on his head, and walked off. And Nanchuan said, "If only you'd been there, the cat would have been saved." There are some translations that say sandal singular, and there are others that say plural. But in any case, what in the world was he indicating, this Zhao Zhou, putting on his sandals and walking off? it's tempting to see this as just some kind of a wild and zany act. Zhao Zhou being the wild and crazy Zen master, that would be a misunderstanding. This was not just random. It wasn't frivolous. Something with profound significance, what he did. To enter this true empty world, immediately affirm not to. In this not to, all is the same, with nothing separate or outside. Here's the one that we didn't read, statement from Zhao Zhou. I entered the Buddhist life when I was a small boy. I have grown old now. Confronted with people, I now find myself powerless to save them. I used to discipline myself in order to help people someday when I became enlightened. Contrary to my expectation, however, I have become a fool, whether you believe it or not. But he would have saved the cat. A commentator has said, Nanchuan didn't cut the cat in two, he cut it in one. Zen Master Dogen said, a sword straight away cuts it. No cut. But Zhao Zhou might say, along with Sun Zan, the author of Affirming Faith in Mind, from one mind comes duality, but cling not even to this one. When this one mind rests undisturbed, then nothing in the world offends. And now, Mumon's commentary. Just say, what is the real meaning of Zhao Zhou's putting his sandal on his head? If you can give a turning word on this point, you will see that Nanchuan's action was not in vain. But if not, beware. Beware the life of duality, of separation. When working on our Zen practice, whether it's a koan or breath, the tendency, of course, is to see it, the koan or the breath, as something apart from us. Object, separated from us as subject. But awakening reveals that there is no such division. The only division is in our mind, that the dichotomy of subject and object is one that's created by words which generate these concepts that then create the illusion of two-ness. And someone a long time ago discovered that through single-minded concentration, absolute absorption in this apparent object called mu, or the breath or whatever, through single-minded absorption in that, we can realize, we can make real that it's not, in fact, really apart from us. In fact, it's our own nature. Because through our absorption, we detach from the thoughts that create the illusion of two-ness. The verse, had Zhao Zhou only been there at the time, he would have taken charge. He would have snatched away the sword, and Nan Shuang would have begged for his life. Genius of the Zen practice is that we don't have to change our beliefs. We don't have to convince ourselves or sell ourselves on the idea of non-duality, of oneness. All we have to do is become so thoroughly absorbed in our practice that we get beyond thoughts. No thoughts, not two. And then what? Beyond two, what is there? Stop now and recite the four vows.